Hi, everyone. Welcome back to Evoke Therapy Programs series where we're talking to our therapists so you can get to know them a little bit better. So today we have Trina Grader. Welcome, Trina.
Hi. Hey, thanks for having me. Hi, everybody.
Trina and I actually had a false start. Trina was the, as is usual in Trina's life, I suspect, and at least at Evoke, she was the first one to volunteer to do one of these as we began our series. But it was our first one. I had some technical difficulties, so we had to restart. So thanks for your patience, Trina, and thanks for rejoining me.
Of course. This is a really cool outlet to be able to capture more than words can of who I am and what I'm about as a therapist. Yeah.
Yeah. So Trina, I think it's interesting to find out what brings people to this work and their background from past careers, positions, passions. Tell us a little bit about your background and how you arrived at the place you are right now as a wellness therapist. What brought you here?
I love this question. I first studied English in undergrad. I was curious about psychology, but I think that there's been a common thread throughout my life that I was really interested about, like, what it means to be human and this world we live in and even the more complexities of it. I did a lot of creative writing and poetry workshops and all these types of things during my undergrad while working at summer camps, notably a family summer camp. And I came to find by the time I was graduating, I wanted to work with people and I wanted to work in the outdoors. And I had no idea wilderness therapy even existed at the time. So I moved around. I worked for the YMCA in a lot of different roles and in different places around the country, which I think also adds to some of what I bring to my clinical work in terms of different cultures and that sort of aspects. But nonetheless, stumbled upon wilderness therapy and just jumped into it. I moved to Utah from New Orleans, Louisiana. And I remember that we talk about what we do in the field at times as the soft skills and the hard skills. And the soft skills being the emotional work, the intuitive stuff, the stuff that takes sensibility, and the hard skills of more of the logistics, navigating, hiking, gear, busting, which is the fire making. And the soft skills came more naturally to me. I worked as staff for an astounding 5 years. I worked often with adolescent girls and in the adolescent girls group and learned a lot from a dear mentor of mine and eventually became his clinical assistant. And all of that was even before going back to grad school. So in some ways, it's so obvious looking back that I am where I am now. And it's also exactly where I'm meant to be, I think, because of that journey. And so it came full circle where I went back to grad school. I did get some other professional experience in RTCs and working with adults as well. And so I've got more of a scope, on this part of the industry. And, I'm exactly where I need to be right now with the young ladies out in the field and doing what's in my heart to do. So that captures
it. It reminds me of Joseph Campbell's comment. He talks about this idea that when we look back on our life, those seemingly insignificant and small forks in the road that make up the fabric of our life become this beautiful tapestry that all makes sense and fits together. And your background and what led you to here from literature to working with young people and youth in camps, all of it from being a field staff to being a clinical assistant with a really, really fantastic mentor whom both you and I love, just works so beautifully for what you bring to the work and to the girls that you work with. Tell us a little bit about your clinical approach, your clinical perspective. What brings you, what do you bring to the table that makes you unique as a therapist?
Oh, but the first thing I want to respond with is just heart. I come to see more and more that what I'm really good at is holding students' feet to the fire, but also bringing this warmth that makes the work approachable. It's like a tightrope to balance that I'm often described as, my clinical work described like a dance. Mm-hmm. I have a lot of strengths to draw from with creative arts, and I bring those into my clinical work. I think even working with young people, well, any of us, but especially with young people, a lot of what we're asking them to process and work through doesn't even fit into words. And so I really embrace whether it's role-playing type of psychodramas or drawing the storm inside of you or making flow charts and different ways to think about accountability and learning from past choices. So I really think about this creative thread within my clinical work reaches students who often are like a deer in the headlights, rightfully so too. When they land here or when they're asked to face themselves.
When you think about it, you know, boiling it down to maybe the most important aspects or aspect, what do you think makes for effective therapy? What's the secret ingredient, the magic sauce, if you will?
It's getting behind the defenses. It's expecting them, forecasting them, joining with the client and looking at them even under a microscope and loving them, even at times for what they did do to us. I think about, and you might even need to tell me, Brad, who I might be quoting here, but therapy, effective therapy, it's that moment where you feel like a complete disaster and miracle at the same time. Right. It's this freeing sense. And I think that that's where I work with really bright kids, and they can be really clever at performing. I think resistance is one of the, or compliance is one of the biggest ways of resistance that isn't caught in programs like this. And any resistance, I meet with such empathy that the students I work with often say, I want to hate you, but I can't.
Mm.
So what's it all boiled down to is really reaching the client, is really allowing them to feel seen. And I think my students feel that way resoundingly.
You know, I've said this about you and to you, but I want to tell everybody who's listening, I feel it when I'm around you and when I'm out there with you and with your clients. I would send my own daughter or son to you. And I would count myself lucky if I had found a therapist as wonderful as you when I was a young person. So I just want to tell you that I have great admiration for you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Tell us about how you think about healing from trauma, how you conceptualize the process of what it means and how you can assist the people that we work with to heal from their traumas.
Essentially, it comes down to having a different experience. Even from the first letter, the students, when I'm helping parents write their child in the field, that's the approach. And throughout, is to think, what has this person experienced in the world when they've said this or when they've done this previously? And I want to surprise them. I don't want to do what's predictable right there. I think that that's part of the nature of healing from really heavy experiences that most all of us have. I also think about how trauma counseling has changed a lot in the past decade or so. And we're starting to understand that it's not about telling your story again and again and again. It's about avenues to reprocess it as we're telling those stories again or thinking of them again. And so I've got some training and some counseling modalities that have very research-founded evidence that it's reprocessing on a neurobiological level. Some of that relates to brain spotting, which grew out of EMDR. But in general, I think that trauma counseling is about that experience.
I'm wondering how you're relatively, I guess not, I was going to say a new mother, but But how old is your baby now? Who's not a baby anymore?
He's a toddler officially, I think now. He's two. He's just past two this past fall.
When you're not the parent, it goes by really, really fast, by the way. So having a son and being a mother, mm-hmm. if at all, or how you can speak to it, how has that changed your perspective as a therapist working with young people who struggle?
Yeah. Well, and I think I have a pretty unique perspective of that too, because I've been working in the helping industries. I've been, you know, I was even like a nanny for a family when I was younger, and I've helped other people with their kids for a long time. And so in some ways I waited a while to have a kid. I knew I had some of a real, very real glimpse of what I was getting in, what I would be getting into with motherhood. I also think that, mm-hmm. that in most people around me sense it even before I was a mother, that I have a very endearing part of me, mm-hmm. that can be motherly. So, being a mom now and at this, the evolution that I'm at right now in my professional development, it's been profound, in pretty subtle ways. One way I was just, teaching some parents about, you know, when my son is, he was playing with the spigot and wanting to put his feet in the sink and all these things. And it can be really easy in a moment of, you know, juggling lots of things to say, that's really frustrating, knock it off, basically. Right. And really, when I do the work that I do, I have this the awareness to also think to myself, wait a second, those are my feelings. I need to own them. I can't try to change his behavior with them. And yeah, and so to just add something, naming that, if I need to say what I said, to say I'm frustrated, that's mine. That's your responsibility. You don't have to carry that. And out of my control, could you please not put your entire body into the sink right now? such a small example. It's been, so I didn't find out the gender of my child before I had him, and working with the LGBTQ community, I almost have some inspirations. Our world's becoming more and more divided, where the gender reveal parties are bigger and yet there's more gender fluidity in the world. And so it was almost like an experiential assignment I gave myself. And I might be going into too much detail here, but I'm fine with it. I won an ultrasound during the pregnancy. I didn't need any others. And I had the person write down the gender of the baby and put it in an envelope, because in my mind, I was like, I don't want to pay for this again if I changed my mind. Mm. My husband and I put it on the fridge, and we knew we could have looked at it, and both of us did not look at it the whole time. And it did get tempting there at the end. I remember thinking, oh, wouldn't it be just fun to know, and then I can buy a pink or a blue or something like that. But those were the most valuable moments for me to really see how much of a narrative, gender aside even, right. that we make for our kids before we even meet them.
Right.
And so I think that's a bigger picture example of how I approach being a parent with the perspectives that I have, where I just really focus on letting my kid be who he is and be his own person and be upset if he wants
right,
to.
Right. Yeah. It's a humbling experience, isn't it? To do the work that we do and then to have to actually raise your own children at the same time or after you've had some experience. Tell us a little bit about your work with LGBTQ. I know that's an emphasis of yours. When I was out in your group most recently, there were several folks who identified as transgender or non-binary. So what are your thoughts on best practices in working with the LGBTQ community?
I've got a lot of passion here, Brad. And I think that the industry is far behind where it needs to be right now. I think that best practice would look like a student a student being able to choose who they want to be housed with and following their lead. This scares parents often. This scares parents. They're like, what if this isn't it? What if this changes again? A lot of what ifs. I think that I can balance advocating for the client as well as holding space for the process, the grieving process for each of them, but for the parents too. I think that best practice looks like a student being able to choose, yeah, what do you want to be called? Okay, who do you want to be housed with? All right, let's get to work. And I think that that's actually the way to, parents are often scared of chasing shadows, wanting to figure that out later. And I often talk about how it's not a horse and a cart and one before the other. This is a whole spider web. But I've had a lot of training just to further understand the privilege that I have as a cisgender woman, and also to expand my awareness of the, I can only begin to imagine what the dysphoria feels like for these students, that there's no way to separate or categorize that from any other therapeutic work. I have a in the moment story to share that is exciting for me, that I had a student arrive on Monday who identifies as male. My group is all identify as female, and that's cisgendered for them. And it was pretty tough, of course, for him. And he was with a dozen other females. And he said, I can't be in this group. I want to be in a boys group. And so there was no system in place to do this, but I was consulting with a lot of different parties and then knew that there could be an option for him to go to a group that I think he could fit really well in, a group of boys. And parents are doing their work and they are on board. And I just came off of a phone call with the student, also with his what would be new therapist in the boys group, a male therapist, on the line too. And he is thrilled. And I just think to myself, like, I had such a small window right there. But those are the moments that gender fluid people don't forget. They don't forget that advocate. They don't forget. And so he's got this opportunity to go to the boys group. It's happening like as we speak even, and not disclose his assigned gender at birth.
Mm.
And just take it on. And with that, he also knows he's in my heart. He can come back if he were to choose to. He knows best.
Right.
And I fully trust that. So go do the work you need to do.
That's so, so amazing. So beautiful. Two simple questions. Can you define cisgender? Because you use that term a couple of times and some people won't know what that is.
Yes, cisgender is when you're assigned a gender at birth and you also identify as it.
Okay. And then I'm sure you have to deal with this because of how many transgender, non-binary clients you've had in your group. How do you soothe the parents who have anxiety about their children being exposed to something that for them is so outside of the box and so foreign and so strange? How do you respond to them and respond to their concerns?
Most of my parents are often concerned that the other girls are going to have different issues, and that oftentimes my students are described as not your typical wilderness student. And like you're saying, there's this fear of learning about other stuff or being exposed to things as not, you know, unnecessarily. The first thing that usually comes to my mind is talking about when parents come and visit in the group and when you're with everybody and they're just humans and we're a group of people, everything is completely normalized. You know, it feels a lot like what the students call the front country. It feels like any other part in our world because it is. What's out there is out here. I also think about the angle that, students often are aware of much more than what we give them credit for. And that includes what we could be protecting them from, or us trying to do that. They could be in resentful then of it. So, you know, often I think it's about being real and being loving and yeah, knowing that that these young ladies are capable of more than they're given credit for often. And so the humanness though shines through. You know, we all get out there and we realize that it's the same roots at the bottom of all of these symptoms.
You mentioned earlier about the idea, you used a phrase, I think, about getting around or behind the defenses. Tell us a little bit about that idea and about what you do to get behind the defenses and how your students, your clients respond to that experience.
Yes, I have become to have such a clear vision of when this metaphorical wall shoots up between different family dynamics and even peers in the group. I think about that defense as a wall that's in front of us, and that traditionally, or even what one could think with the shame innate to facing what they are asked to face here in this program, that it's intended to just swipe away that whole wall and leave somebody naked. And so I think a lot of my approach is about validating that armor has been there for good reason at times. And even it can be a cruel world. You're going to need some of this armor again at times. Earlier this week, I had a new student I met with for the first time, and we were talking about this exact concept. And I even pulled my chair over close to her and sat beside her then and said, you know, I think it's gotten pretty lonely back here too. And she burst into tears. And I think that captures a lot of my approach to the defenses. I want to take a magnifying glass up to them, like I had mentioned earlier, and understand them. And my students come to see, I mean, there's a culture of kindness in my group. Students even name in themselves, okay, nope, that was just my defense. Yeah, I feel it. It's there. Mm-hmm. I'm defensive right now. And I think that's profound. I think that so much can come from there.
I think that's a wonderful instinct in you, and one that I for sure had to develop over time. And it's not as common, you know, it's difficult for parents. It's not how we were raised to kind of understand and have compassion for the defense. Most of us were raised with thinking it's bad or wrong and it just needs to be removed. And many therapists actually don't have that instinct or that practice that you do. So I appreciate that.
I think to myself, and I say this to parents too, if you're ever starting to feel frustrated, you're missing out on understanding.
Mm. That's a nice, simple tool, a reminder. So let me ask about outside of work and outside of working with clients, your passions, your interests, and maybe as a mother and working a full-time job, that role of mother swallows up. We know that can happen for mothers and for fathers, that can swallow up some of your personal interests and passions and hobbies and self-care. But what is it that you like to do? What tell us a little bit about side of yourself, fun facts about you outside of the work setting.
Well, I take my self-care still very seriously. It's the good old oxygen mask metaphor on the airplane. I do a lot of dance classes, yoga classes. I haven't been writing as much as I used to, but I still collect. I collect so much. I do more painting recently. I've got a dog and she's a cattle dog. And those are one of my simple pleasures, is being able to just go on a little hike with her. I live outside of town in a cabin with a wood-burning stove, and so I like to think that I still have a lot of wilderness even in my home life. But even just house projects, and we've got a big garden here, keep me busy in my spare time.
Fascinating.
I in the past, in a handful of years ago, before before I had my child, I probably canyoneered hundreds of miles in wow. southern Utah. That was kind of my outdoor activity for a while. Yeah.
Well, Trina, like I mentioned earlier, I don't have enough. I can't say enough. There's aren't enough words to express my appreciation, respect, gratitude, affection for you and for the work that you do for us. The best way I can say it is I'm so grateful to be on the same team with you, and so grateful for all the ways that you show up in the world and all you bring to Evoke and to the clients that are lucky enough and the parents of those clients that are lucky enough to end up in your group.
Thank you so much, Brad. Thanks for seeing me.
And I mean that from the bottom of my heart. Well, thank you, folks. Thank you for joining us again for this series of podcasts. We hope this gives you a glimpse into the kinds of people, the kinds of amazing people that work here at Evoke as therapists and other key roles in helping you and your family. And we'll talk to you next time on the series. Take care. Bye-bye.